This is episode number 758 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Brian Michael Bendis leaving Guardians of the Galaxy. We're going to talk about Holmes and Watson, and that's all I'm going to say until we get to that, and some convention trends to watch for in this year of 2017. Our comics this week will be G.I. Joe number 1, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 5, and Rocket Raccoon number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendre here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, and I must ask you, since we're not going to talk about any TV today, did you happen to see The Mick?
I did not, but you are the second person who has had that reaction. I had my friend at work come up to me, and that was the first thing he said was, "Holy crap. You need to watch it." It's with Caitlin Olson, who is, of course, from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Which premiered last night. It is DVR'd as soon as we're done recording. Everybody out of the house, I'm watching it.
Yeah. So she is still on Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but is also in this new show, which I believe the premise is that she is left to care for her sister's kids.
It's her sister's kids. They get arrested, and then they flee the country. So now she's there. There's three kids. Two of them are total Richie snob brats. The other one's this little kid that is sort of the foil in everything. He gets he goes to a Japanese cookery where they're cooking on the grill and your table's the grill, and he licks the grill because they bet him, and he burns all his taste buds off.
It is
a show. The funniest thing was I begged my wife to watch it. I said, please just watch it with me.
Because she's like my wife in that she hates the stupid stuff that we really enjoy. And is constantly either rolling her eyes or shaking her head at the dumb stuff that we laugh at, right?
Yes. Yeah. And she was laughing more than I was.
Which is awesome.
I was.
Anytime you can score a victory like that where you have to convince them to watch something and then it wins them over is great.
We watched the first one, which aired after football on Sunday. And then after it, they said, don't forget to join us for an all-new episode of The Mick on Tuesday. And my wife said, oh, excellent. We only have to wait a couple days. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome.
Like, things are going great this year so far.
I love this woman.
I like it. That's exciting. I will check that show out. I did want to talk about, because I know this is a book that you've been reading, Guardians of the Galaxy, because Brian Michael Bendis recently announced that he is departing the Guardians of the Galaxy with the current Grounded storyline being his last one of the series. The author mentioned that his final issue will be triple-sized and be drawn by the regular series artist Valerio Schiti, who is now on All New, All Different Avengers, I believe. Comicbook.com broke the news with an in-depth Bendis interview on his decision to leave the series. Here's what he had to say. It was a couple of things. Number one, I had an end to the story that I've been building to, and it's time to unleash it. Number two, there were other projects offered to me that I was like, oh, I want to do that, and something has to go. Even I have a bandwidth cap, even though no one at Marvel thinks that I do. It says Bendis alluded to the fact that there's already a new team on the way for the series, saying the new creative team is one that I like. I want to tee them up in a good way. Here's hoping that new team is Abnett and Lanning.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I know the two of them are working separately on a lot of projects.
Yeah,
that would
it's not
probably,
going to be
it would yeah.
because I think they've closed that chapter on the on their take on the Marvel Cosmic Universe, but they have spoiled me for all future takes on the Marvel Cosmic Universe. Like, since the end of their major Annihilation stuff, I just don't have the same love anymore.
I will agree that there is a lot of those books that come out, like when, you know, oh, we got Nova coming out. Yeah, that's great. But if it's not Abnett and Lanning writing it, I'm not
I don't really care.
Really into it.
Yeah.
And I fell away. I started to fall away from Guardians of the Galaxy because I just wasn't really digging the way that the characters were portrayed. I also wanted the movie. I wanted the movie characters. I know they have to put Ben Grimm somewhere. So one of the books that I'll be talking about a little later plays into this Grounded story arc. But I really got away. I've gotten away from almost every Marvel book except for Steve Rogers, Captain America, and Star Wars.
Yeah. So I wonder how other people feel about that. Are people reading Guardians of the Galaxy? I'm assuming that it's been a fairly good selling book for them. I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but maybe we should look at that when the next ones come out. Where is Guardians selling? And does it take a huge hit when he comes off of it? For me, and nothing against Brian Michael Bendis, he's not a big selling point for me.
No.
Like, I'm now interested to hear who the next creative team is, and I don't know if it's been announced yet or not, but you know, we all have creators that when their name is on a book, you are more inclined to pick that book up.
Yep.
Juan Ferreira, I just mentioned, who is the artist on Green Arrow right now. That's a pickup book for me, even if I wasn't already reading Green Arrow, because I want to see what that guy's doing. Francesco Francavilla is a pickup guy for me. Mark Waid is a pickup guy for me. So, yeah, there are definitely creators that you are going to follow no matter what they're doing. Brian Michael Bendis has not been that for me.
No, and he's somebody that I think what his next thing that he really needs to do is maybe get a hold of some DC characters. Like, he's played in Marvel for 20 years now. If you think about this run that he has had there.
How about this?
He's touched everybody.
And then they would never do this. But instead of Avengers versus Justice League, you swap Bendis and Geoff Johns for a year.
That would be cool.
Bendis goes over almost like a Heroes Reborn sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where they just do this event where you pick maybe three creators from DC that are exclusive right now and send them over to Marvel for a year. And then Marvel does the same thing.
That would be the coolest.
Yeah. That'll never happen.
Because I would love to see what he could do with DC's characters.
Yep. Jim Lee, go over to Marvel for a year.
Yeah.
Draw the crap out of them.
Just draw that.
Redesign everybody's character. Give everybody collars.
And armor.
Yep, and armor.
Yep.
Absolutely. So yeah, Bendis leaving the Guardians. Now, there was a great article, and I'm not going to read all of it, over on ICV2 by Rob Salkowitz about con trends to watch in 2017. So I'm going to read his introduction, and then I'll pick a couple points out to read. He says, although there isn't much industry-wide data for 2016 in terms of the number of fan conventions, total attendance or ticket sales, my sense from reading the show-by-show reports over the course of the year is that the business has held on to recent gains. So where is this multi-billion dollar industry heading in the year to come? Let's see. Where does he get to the 2017 stuff? Because he goes over to a lot of the stuff that happened in 2016. And one of the things that he talked about that happened in 2016 is that shows are now starting to offer experience insurance. So first he says, how much longer will the growth continue and will the, you know, will the all these new shows coming up continue to serve the needs of the changing audience? And we talk about this all the time. He says, in 2017, I think we'll see more experimentation with different formats that bring in experiential components. Premium movie viewing options, on-site virtual reality, augmented reality, location-based mobile games and attractions, collaborations with other community institutions and businesses. We'll also see more attempts to bring together genre fans with other tribes of popular culture, hip-hop anime mashups, toy collectors and makers, celebrity chasers and foodies. This will lead to the development of interesting new kinds of fan events that finally break the 50-year mold. So what he's saying is you're going to see even more sort of diversity in the types of events that are happening because they've kind of this sort of, and I hate to call it the wizard model, but this sort of celebrity and pop culture convention model that is done on a much bigger scale with New York and with San Diego now is what kind of dominated the mainstream. And then we've seen these smaller shows that are kind of back to basic shows grow. Like we just talked about Plastic City Comic Con, Terrificon being another one that are sort of these back to traditional comic book show kinds of things. But nationwide on a bigger scale, it's these fan experiences where it's a little bit of everything. He said experience insurance with more conventions offering super expensive VIP packages that include FaceTime with celebrities and special guests. What's a fan to do if a guest or a guest of honor cancels or gets sick? What happens if the photographer spoils the once-in-a-lifetime photo op? Most of the time, fans don't have much recourse, even if they can obtain refunds from the event or ticketing agency, and that's a big if. They've still shelled out travel costs for themselves and maybe their families for a weekend spoiled by events beyond their control. But what if fans could buy a hedge against a disaster, an insurance policy in force for the duration of the event to cover unexpected disappointments and loss of financial experiments? The insurance industry is getting better at packaging these kind of pop-up policies. series. Expect a couple of shows at least to start offering this option for an additional 10 to 15%. Now, this is him sort of speculating.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty interesting.
It is. We are in an area where there are several shows that throw out 500 huge guests. You buy your tickets, and then as the show starts to get closer, oh, this person just pulled out.
Yes.
Oh, this person canceled. Try to get a refund.
Yep.
And you cannot do it, and it is
impossible.
And
we know some shows for a long time that put guests on their pages that are never going to be attending that show.
Yeah.
That are kind of always statically there every time the show. I'm thinking of a couple in particular where
I mean, you and I know exactly which ones
were. It's like, oh, this person is listed again as coming to this show, and they never end up actually coming to that show. But it's this eye catcher when people go on there.
Yeah, and it makes you buy tickets. If you're interested, you buy your tickets right away. And then when that person doesn't come and then you read the fine print, it's a sad way to do business, and it is terrifying to think that that is something like you know what we're going to do? We're going to offer insurance.
Right.
So that doesn't happen to you.
So that's one thing that he put out there. Another one, the conification of non-fan events. You can't have an industry generating the kind of buzz and money that fan cons have done for the past decade without having others notice. Trade shows and other kinds of consumer events, from car shows to food festivals to music concerts, are all looking to the fan con space to figure out how to generate the same levels of excitement and engagement. Is it the celebrities? Is it the cosplay? Is it the artists? Is it the fan-generated meetups? Expect to see lots of unlikely events trying out familiar ideas from the comics, anime, and gaming worlds in 2017, and expect to groan much and have to explain to non-nerd acquaintances that, no, this is not what a real Comic-Con is actually like.
Yeah.
So think about it. When you think about some of the all-day music festivals at the Meadows and stuff like that around here, are they going to start borrowing ideas from a New York Comic Con, from some of these other shows about, and obviously some of them do meet and greet packages and things like that, but I could see some of these other events becoming more conified, as he's saying.
Yeah. And things like when Terrificon last year, when they had Kevin Smith.
Yep.
That is a huge draw, and that's a huge extra thing that you can do. If, you know what, while you're here, if you like Kevin Smith, we'll put on it. He's going to be here. He's going to be performing. When we were there, I think the year before, Alice Cooper, and then last year might have been Motley Crue.
Uh-huh.
And if there's ways to put those kind of packages together, because a lot of us, you know, I know you and I are speaking for ourselves that hard rock, heavy metal, and a concert is like, oh, that's the perfect thing.
And I don't think he listed that here, but you and I have talked about that because we talk about frequently like the brilliance of having Terrificon at Mohegan Sun, right? Where you now have the leverage of not only a gaming casino, but also this arena venue there as well, and the club venue for, as you said, you know, Kevin Smith to come in and do that. So to me, one of the smartest things that convention organizers could do is put themselves in a space that offers them multiple opportunities to expand that experience. When you have that arena, if you could time the con at a time where there is a major tour going on or something like that, that might get you some extra business. You know, that kind of stuff is kind of interesting to me. This next one that he talks about is interesting as well. Brand police crackdown. The sale of unlicensed merchandise at fan conventions has gone on since the dawn of time without it being a big deal. But at this point, the volume of dollars being skimmed off from knockoff t-shirts, apparel, prints, posters, toys, and other mass-produced merchandise is now getting too big to ignore. Expect brands and license holders to become a lot more present and assertive, especially at bigger shows, but also at mid-sized ones. This is likely to cause some tension for organizers caught between the desire to keep the big boys happy and the need to fill their exhibit halls with vendors, many of whom fall into this gray area. So this is a big one because we've talked for years now, too, about when is the crackdown going to happen in Artist Alley, where you have a Marvel or a DC coming and telling people that they can no longer sell their renditions of these particular characters and stuff like that. That is a rumor that gets more and more pervasive every year. That crackdown really hasn't happened yet. So we're still seeing that pretty much at every show we go to. But if that happens, that changes everything.
I think the biggest thing that they need to be cracking down upon is the guy, and I'm picturing one guy in particular, that is at half the shows that we attend, that we are set up at, that has prints that he doesn't even own. And he goes and he gets these prints and he sells them. He's selling work that's not even his. It's not even the character.
Right.
He's stealing the art from somebody. We had a When I was at Hudson Valley last year, there was a guy, the same guy that I see at every other show, selling all his prints, thousands of prints. And one of the – and this guy, Al, who I met there at the show, goes, hey, that's the guy who was selling my prints last year at another show. And we started talking, and he goes – he went over because he saw, oh, that's a cool price. You know, I'll get it like two prints for $20.
Uh-huh.
A couple of people will be happy. And he's flipping through, and he goes, this is my print. This is my version of Batman.
Uh-huh.
And his style and his everything – and that's the stuff that needs to be cracked down upon, because he said something to the guy. The guy's like, well, yeah, you know, I'm just selling it for somebody else.
Right.
I don't know all this stuff. And that's the stuff, because the second they go in and start telling Chris Giarrusso, yeah, really nice, you love your art, but you cannot draw any Marvel or DC characters in your cute little style, that's when it's going to – that's when the industry as far – or the artist alley will cease to exist.
And what I worry about with that is that it feels like at a lot of these bigger shows, the artists are getting pushed farther and farther out of the experience anyway.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like that's where some of the stuff is coming to a head, is that these cons, many of the bigger ones, seem to value the artists less and less. And so maybe they're thinking it's not a big deal to shut all of them down now because we really don't need them anyways. You know what I mean? And so that's where I worry about that. I think what this article doesn't really get into, because it was talking more about the big shows, is I think these smaller shows now, these more local shows, are rising up to fill the need and fill that gap. And they are coming from a place of celebrating the creators, which is really kind of cool. And so we talked about Plastic City, you know, we talk about Terrificon, and there's a lot of other shows around here that we go to on a regular basis that have done that. So it's going to be very interesting. Again, Rob Salkovitz on ICV2.com. You can go and check out his con trends to watch in 2017. And he talks about more stuff within that article. It was really, really good. So the last thing I want to mention in our news before we start talking about comics today, Matthew, is a movie that I don't think I've been as excited for this movie. I can't remember the last time I was so excited for a movie.
Is it Sing?
No, it's not.
Because that was very cute.
It's not Sing. Maybe the first Spider-Man movie. I mean, I'm super excited about Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. But it's a little movie called Holmes and Watson, Matthew.
Hmm.
You might know – well, I'm sure you know Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes and Watson.
And I'm sure you know the actors who have portrayed these characters over time.
Oh, all through the years.
You have the current incarnation with Benedict Cumberbatch. You have the Robert Downey Jr. And who played Watson?
Jude Law.
Jude Law played Watson in those movies. Sir Ian McKellen played Sherlock Holmes at one point, I believe.
It's like any classic British actor had played.
How about Will Ferrell?
Why not?
And what if Watson was John C. Reilly?
Oh my gosh, I was just going to say, is it John C. Reilly? Because you know what I bought yesterday on Blu-ray? Step Brothers.
Which is easily, right now, if you ask me today, it's the funniest movie I've ever seen.
Step Brothers.
Yes. It will always be in my top five.
And
my top
I went to Music Outlet today too.
Let me tell you, Step Brothers
is all over.
The funniest movie right now that I've ever seen in my entire life. And every time I watch it, I laugh the same way every single time I watch
it. Every joke is brand new every time you
hear
it.
Why are you sweating? I was watching Cops. Just brilliant.
Dale, who's driving the boat?
Just everything about that movie. So, and I love those two. And Talladega Nights, which was not a fantastic movie overall, just
still
because
great.
Of the two of them.
Yep.
Just because of the two of them. In fact, in some ways, John C. Reilly is funnier than Will Ferrell in Step Brothers. That's how good is in that movie. When he's walking through the mall and his neck is cut because Will Ferrell put the...
And he doesn't even notice.
Dude, that is one of the funniest... The facial expression. So anyways, there are articles circulating now. I have known for a while that they were going to make this movie.
Mm.
They are filming this movie right now in London. Wow. As we record this show, this movie is being filmed, and there have already been pictures leaked from this movie, and simply from the three images that I saw from this movie, I was in tears watching it. I saved one to my phone. I will show it to you before we leave here today. That movie is either going to be the most disappointing movie I've ever seen in my entire life or the funniest movie ever made in the history of the world.
Wow.
That's how excited I am for this movie. I love those two together. Yeah. Love them together.
Is there a release date?
I don't even know.
Oh.
If it's being filmed right now, I'm going to guess that it's an early 2018
yep.
you know, release, but holy cow, it's happening. The only other, on the one hand, Step Brothers 2 would be an announcement that made me lose my mind.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I don't even know if I want them to go back there.
Mm-mm.
Because that movie is perfect.
Yes.
It's absolutely perfect. Now, them doing, but I want them to do a movie every year. I just want them to do a movie every year. Just have a movie with the two of them. I don't care what it's about. Pick a topic every year. Pick it out of a hat. I don't care. Sherlock Holmes and Watson, are you kidding me? So be excited, people, because that is going to be exciting. I can't wait for the first trailer for that because I'm going to lose my mind. So that's your news. Now let's get into comic books. And we're going to start off with a book today, Matthew, that we both picked up and both decided to talk about. And we have different covers of, and that is G.I. Joe number one. So we're talking about IDW. We're talking about the post-revolution IDW, which is called Reconstruction.
We are in the Reconstruction mode right now.
Now, I'm glad that you read this book as well this week, because I read this and clearly I am missing some stuff because I did not finish reading Revolution.
Yeah.
I think I only read the first issue of Revolution. So my understanding of where we are with Reconstruction is that we are now in the beginning phases of the shared universe of Hasbro.
Yes.
And so what you see on the cover to G.I. Joe number one, or what's on my cover at least, is Scarlet, Rock and Roll, Helix, Snake Eyes, Quick Kick, which we will talk about in a moment, and Skywarp from the Transformers.
Yes.
So you have G.I. Joe's, and Skywarp is super cool. So you have G.I. Joe and Transformers on the first issue of G.I. Joe, and it says on the bottom, the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe. So, I mean, that's setting a high bar.
That's a big tag.
For what your expectations are for this book. And but I like it. I like that they're setting the bar high, because G.I. Joe is my childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, Transformers, always near and dear to my heart as well, but it will always be G.I. Joe in terms of those properties that will always be my favorite.
I saw the tagline, and my first thought was, huh, that would be like a band releasing an album saying, oh my God, better than the Beatles.
Right.
Because you're really setting yourself pretty high on this one. Now, following Revolution, what I took out of Revolution, I was a little disappointed in how it played out. The first couple issues I thought were really, really good.
Uh-huh.
Because you're seeing G.I. Joe fighting the Transformers, fighting ROM, and then you throw the Micronauts in there, and they're kind of mixed up with everybody. And then you
and
have
Mobile
this,
Armor Strike Command.
You
Mask,
have a reintroduction
right?
to Mask. Yep. I knew nothing about Mask. And honestly, it really almost seemed to me throughout the entire thing that that was just a book to create Mask out of. And this other group, the Revolutionaries. That is almost what I got out of it, where it wasn't necessarily to me an organic story of this great thing happening. It almost was like, all right, the mantra of this book is two new series coming out of it. Go.
Well, here's the thing, though. It's the beginning of this universe. Mm-hmm. I will give them some leeway because you're trying to mash all these properties together, and you know it's not always going to be seamless, right?
Yeah.
And so what threw me, though, immediately as I got into this book is that you start off with Scarlet, who apparently is the leader.
She's now in charge.
Of the Joes now, who is basically talking about this next mission that they're going to go on. And as the camera pans out, you have Shipwreck, you have Wild Bill, you have Roadblock, you have Rock and Roll, and you have Quick Kick in the background, even though I don't believe they even mentioned that it's Quick Kick in the background.
Not yet.
Because what you do not see from Quick Kick is you do not see him in his iconic G.I. Joe uniform, which was disappointment number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these guys are all basically wearing street clothes. You know what it is? They're wearing stuff that doesn't lend itself to licensing for a toy. Like,
well,
if you think about the
I mean,
toys,
Scarlet's got something close to her old uniform on. Rock and Roll is easily recognizable with his machine gun. And you know, Snake Eyes looks like Snake Eyes. Helix, I believe, was around for... I think Helix has been around for a while, right?
I think so.
Because I think I remember her from the Devil's Due series.
You have Helix. Yeah, she's been around since then. And you've got Doc.
Oh, you've got Doc.
Doc, who's
Doc's
the other
daughter.
One. Yes.
Yeah, Doc has a daughter now who's also with G.I. Joe. And so she's the new Doc on the team.
And I love how where we start out with this huge battle in the streets of Tokyo...
Right.
You basically have like a, it's a battle crew. You have a squad in there And you've got Doc with him. I think my favorite part of this whole thing is that you have the medic out there going, yeah, I don't even know why I'm out here. This is kind of freaking me out.
But aren't they basically saying here that the dire wraiths, right?
Yes.
That the dire wraiths are now here on this planet.
And they're from Rom. That's part of the Rom verse.
And they can look like anyone, right? Or they can possess people or whatever. They're basically like body snatchers. And you have the Transformers who are here, and you have a fusion of Cybertronian technology with what G.I. Joe was used to using. So they now have access to Cybertronian technology, and it sounds like they're working together somewhat with the Transformers to battle the dire wraiths.
Yeah, you have Skywarp. Skywarp. Skywarp is now kind of part of the team, which I thought was a really cool addition.
I think that's a great idea.
But yeah, as you have these guys through, they're fighting, you know, I thought of you right away where it's like, huh, nothing better than a four-arm ninja to start this battle.
So right away you're thrown into this, to this mission where the Joes are going. I believe they're going to try to get to a facility where they need to extract people from.
Yes.
And I think that's where you're getting your flashback. So you're seeing this flashback of this mission that they went on where it looks like Rock and Roll ended up facing off against Grand Slam and shooting him. And so you don't really know what the history is there. And now you fast forward to Tokyo and they're on a new mission. And you've got, again, it's Scarlet, Roadblock, Rock and Roll, Quick Kick, Shipwreck, and Doc. That's a good crew. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that crew. So now we're running through the streets of Tokyo fighting robot ninjas.
Yes.
You've got Roadblock, Doc, and Rock and Roll who are facing off against these ninjas. And then you have Snake Eyes who comes in for support. And it looks like Helix is using this visor that she wears to basically, with pinpoint accuracy, tell Snake Eyes, like, hit him here.
Yep.
Do this. Here's his weakness. That kind of stuff. And so all of that battle playing out over the first, like, 10 pages is really, really cool. Snake Eyes jumping into the action and not only using his Uzi, but then also backing it up with the sword. I like that combination because he's always had them, but a lot of times they lean so heavily on the ninja side of things that I like the commando side of things too. So that's super cool. Snake Eyes looks great. Big battle ensues. Roadblock to me looks smaller than he usually does. He doesn't look like twice the size of everybody else, which he usually is, but I'm okay with that. So they make it to this clearing in the park after they're fighting these ninjas, and it looks like there's only a few of them left. And you have Roadblock saying, you know, look, you guys are surrounded. And when he says that, all of a sudden a ton more ninjas show up, and that's when they call in Skywarp for backup. And it's kind of awesome to see a Transformer flying across the city and then transforming and landing behind them, and you see the Joes with Skywarp behind them. There's a great sense of scale there.
Yeah.
And I should have mentioned up top that you have the creative team here. Aubrey Sitterson is the writer on this book.
Yep.
Giannis Milongiannis is the artist. Colorist is Laverne Kinzerski. Letters by Chris Mowry. Edited by Carlos Guzman. And the publisher is Ted Adams there. So that was a really cool moment in terms of art, I think, where you saw the scale of Skywarp showing up and having them having their back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really kind of cool. And that kind of ends that battle right there. And so the next thing you know, they're back at their home base, which appears to be underwater, but I'm not sure. But anyways, it's a piece of Cybertronian technology, and it was called the Nemesis before, and now they're calling it Lemuria.
Yeah.
So Lemuria is the base that they have now, but they basically have a headquarters that is infused with Cybertronian technology. So here again, we're seeing the Cybertronian technology get brought into the mix, and you have Gung-Ho in the mess hall, and you have Cover Girl in the mess hall, and you have Lady J in the mess hall. So I'm like, okay, I like all of these
G.I. Joes. Yeah, this is a good team already here.
This is a really good team here, and they're talking about their next mission. And for the next mission, they have Gung-Ho and Lady J, who are supposed to act as a couple on the next mission, and they're going to go out together. And, you know, Cover Girl's kind of making fun of them a little bit. You have Dialtone, who shows up, and she is told to go get Quick Kick. And then you have Doc, who goes downstairs, and it looks like they have a dire wraith in captivity.
Yep.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to develop technology that will let them detect when a dire wraith is in human form.
Because Rom can, because he has that technology. He has it in his I forgot what it is, but he's got his weapon.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he can see. So he can see that, not everybody else can. Right. He can see through the human facade.
And they haven't been able to crack the code yet. So you have Doc who's down there. You have Grand Slam who's down there, and he is now in a wheelchair. And you have the younger Doc who comes down, and she's talking to them, and they haven't been able to get this device just right yet. And you see that Grand Slam is super frustrated because he now, due to his injuries, is not able to be out in the field in the way mm-hmm. that he was before, and he's really frustrated about that. And there's a moment where Rock and Roll shows up to talk to him about maybe getting some new weapons because he's still lugging around that old machine gun. And you could tell that their conversation is very tense, and Rock and Roll is trying to apologize to him for whatever happened. And this was kind of the moment where I was like, it would have been really good to have a little bit clearer indication mm-hmm. of exactly what those events were before, because even though you see that they had some sort of a face-off, you don't really see why.
Yeah.
It's not super clear. Like, clearly, it seems like Grand Slam was defending someone who was probably a Wraith, and Rock and Roll knew about it, and so they had to fight each other or whatever, but you don't really get that really clearly. So then we get our introduction to Quick Kick, and it's awesome to get, don't get me wrong, it is awesome to see Quick Kick in a book like this. And he seems pretty cool. Not a fan of the outfit so far.
I was
going
to say, he's dressed like I am, so it's probably not.
Not a fan. He looks like he has your haircut.
Yeah.
So he's not, I'm not a fan of the outfit so far. What I do like is that he seems to be a highly valued member of the team,
mm-hmm.
not an also-ran, which I'm very excited about. And so they're talking about their next mission. They're going to China, and they're going there because there is an enemy there that has taken over a particular area. And as we get a couple pages more in, you see that that group is none other than Crystal Ball and the Dreadnoks.
Yep.
So the Dreadnoks have now shown up in Inner Mongolia, and they have sort of created an area that they've completely taken over, and that's where the Joes are going next. So,
and it's almost cool with that part, like when you see this whole thing, that when you think of the Dreadnoks, you basically think of another mech group of over-muscled dudes that do stuff.
Right.
This is a guy, like, it's Crystal Ball, that's the guy, right? The main guy?
That's, well, that's their leader now, but he wasn't always an
Yeah, he's, this guy's in here right now, and he's trying to be, he's kind of coming across like the Messiah. Like, hey, you know what? Let me be the guy to lead you places.
Well,
I'm your
I think
God.
That's his shtick. He's
I'm
a mind control
that.
Type of guy.
Yep,
he's
I love
like
it.
Dr. Mindbender. And so, but what I like about the Dreadnoks is that they're this fusion of biker gang and sort of old tech.
Bad guys are wrestling.
Yeah, that I really, really like. So very cool stuff. So I think overall, I liked the story in this one. The artwork to me is a little inconsistent
yes.
at times. There is a very sort of almost sketchy style
yep.
to it that you either are going to click to right away or you're not going to, but it has some great moments. I mentioned the Skywarp moment where he sort of lands in the park. Looks fantastic. And the actual flow of the action comes across really well. So what I think that this issue could have done better is a little more clarification of where we've come from.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to have a lot of readers like me who maybe didn't read all of the Revolution stuff but are coming in now because it's a new number one G.I. Joe. So make that first issue really welcoming.
Yeah. And I thought they did a great job giving you sort of the, hey, these are the players. This is where you are. This is where we are going to be. Here's your preview to a bad guy. You got a fight. You got sort of a lot of – you have enough of an understanding of what happened, but you have a lot of questions that aren't answered. I mean, I even read Revolution and
sure.
still don't even know half the stuff that happened. And I was not a fan at all of the art. The art took me right out of it. Mm-hmm. I got the Oliver Oliveri cover, which
–
Ariel Oliveri, yeah. which – strike one for me, because I saw that. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be good, because I wanted this art. This is what I wanted inside. And when you think of G.I. Joe, you think of something that's the art in there is very much for a Western book, a sort of an indie book, something like that. Very pencil-y. There's
I
a lot of
I could see how you would think it was
feel.
A little more Tattish, you know, in terms of like the Jonah Hex run or something
yeah.
like that. Like I could see how that might feel that way a little bit. Yeah.
When detail and part of their armor and part of what they, you know, what they wear, what they carry, their weapons, all that stuff is so detail oriented. And I think like the art in here is not as detail oriented. It is. It's very liney. Like, it's not straight lined. It's a lot of sketch art. And I kind of struggle with that. And I'm going to stick with this for two or three issues because I love the cast. I love the idea of Dire Wraiths infiltrating everything, everyone, everybody.
I'll tell you right now, I'm in because Quick Kick. Like,
and I'm very excited about like, the oddity of characters.
And we didn't get to see him in action this issue.
Yeah.
But I like Quick Kick. I'm a fan of Cover Girl. Like, I kind of like that Duke and Flint are not major
You're
players
not relying
in this,
on
like,
them.
Right now, because I think that they are over-relied on. So I'm interested to see where this goes for sure. And I can't wait to see Quick Kick in action.
Yep.
Especially because, you know, I was the kid growing up that everybody liked Snake Eyes. I was the Quick Kick guy. Always. And when you have those two characters together, that to me is super interesting. How are you using them?
The two martial art guys.
You can't just have them both go into ninja mode. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm excited to see what this incarnation of Quick Kick is. And sort of how he operates within that group dynamic. So I'm very, very much looking forward to the next issues of this for sure.
All right. So I'm up next.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we are going to talk about a book that we just spoke about a little while ago in our news, and that is Rocket Raccoon number one, part of the Grounded line. The Grounded storyline.
This is the last storyline of Bendis, right?
Yes. Yeah. So this is, and it was funny because I saw it. I love the cover. This is a David Nakayama cover.
Big Hero 6.
Which is one of the most amazing. This cover made me buy this book.
Uh-huh.
So I saw it. I'm like, holy cow, it says number one now. And then I had to make sure that it was actually not number 22.
Was it?
No, it was number one.
Oh, okay.
It is because legit number one.
I just picked up Punisher number 7, and that was a number one now sort of thing. Which, I mean, I think that's misleading to, on the one hand, do I like the fact that you're saying this is a start of a new story arc? Yes.
Don't do it
on
that way.
On the other hand, do I like that you are almost burying the actual number of the book and making the number one look so big that for people who are just taking a cursory glance on the shelf, they think that that is a number one?
Yep.
Oh, that's so cool with that. On the third hand, though, do numbers even matter anymore?
Yeah.
Because with the reboots that we have so frequently now, that sort of continuity, it doesn't even matter anymore.
And here was another selling point for me, because of course I looked at it and said, all right, let's see how much this number one is going to cost me. $3.99.
Okay.
So that was very good right
all
there.
All right.
So we had a lot of stuff going in. What I want from Rocket Raccoon comic is I want Howard the Duck. I want a character trapped in a situation and in a world that he cannot get out of, I don't want him in like raccoon world. I don't necessarily like him with a bunch of aliens. I like him being the only raccoon and people freaking out that there's a big raccoon walking around or a little raccoon. So I will say, Matthew Rosenberg, you wrote me the story I exactly wanted. Jorge Coelho, freaking amazing art. Antonio Fabella did the colors on this one. Jeff Eckleberry was the inkist. David Nakayama, as I said, did the cover. So we start out with Rocket Raccoon talking about the fact or showing that, I guess this is what happened in Grounded, is that their ship blew up and he is now stranded on Earth. And he's walking around Times Square. And the first thing you do is see straight down with the big TVs and everything in New York, people everywhere. And you see Rocket's head and he says, this planet sucks. So I'm in. He's walking around. People are looking around as he's walking by going, oh, my gosh, what is that? One person says, I think it's Squirrel Girl.
Which I'm sure he loves.
Which was perfect. He's like, you're all awful. I want you to know that. And his quips back and forth. There's a guy there playing guitar in front of a strip club. And he's like, everything about your culture sucks. Well, almost everything. And then he zooms in on one of the pictures of the girls. So as he's walking in, he gets booted out of the club. And you have these girls that are walking by going, hey, is that hedgehog going in there? And one of the girls goes, oh, that's gross. But all they're doing is still, they're just clicking on their phones. They're not even looking up at what's going on. He gets booted out. He's all bent out of shape. He goes up and he's like, oh, my gosh, Iron Man. Thank God you're here. Stark, you got to help me. And it's not Iron Man. It's some dude in a plastic Iron Man suit on the streets of New York.
Uh-huh.
$5 a picture.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, you're not even Iron Man. You're plastic. And he's like, yeah, get out of here, you cheapskate. Get your own spot. And he's like, oh, you know what? Remember never to team up with that guy ever again. And he's rifling through the trash because he's hungry. He finds a pretzel. And as he's starting to get ready to eat it, there's a guy next to him going, yeah, you know what? I just need a little help, sir. I'm a veteran. I lost my house. I lost my job. I've got nowhere to go. And I'm basically starving to death. So Rocket goes, all right, here, take the freaking pretzel. And the guy goes, well, yeah, I don't want that. I want a burger from in that place. So Rocket Raccoon walks into Burgery. And goes in, and everybody, as he's walking in, they're like, it's a rat. ew, it's disgusting. So the kid behind the counter already is like, both of you need to get out of here before I call the cops. He's like, look, this man is starving to death. Can you have something to give him that passes for food? And they're like, nope, can't give you anything. So he grabs a bag from somebody and he walks out. He grabs some fries and he goes, now you won't die at least for a day. Gives it to the guy. And he's like, oh, thank you, skunk man. And as he walks out, he goes down into the subway. And as he's standing on the subway platform, you see just 20 people over on this side, 20 people on that side, a large space, and him in the middle. And he's like, you know what? All the things I've ever done for these idiots, and they don't even care. They're just being rotten and rude. And he's complaining. And then as he's sitting on a subway car, there's a woman looking at him. And these cops come up and go, hey, can we have a word? And he's like, is it an option? And the cop goes, nope. And he goes, so why do you even ask? He goes, well, because you need to come with us. And then he's like, look, mustache, you know, I'm going to have a problem with you and I'm not going with you. Mm-hmm. So he claws that cop, knocks him down, big fight on the subway, runs through the cars, gets his gun, shoots out the thing. So then the car with all the cops on it gets separated, starts going down. And then as he gets out on the, the kid is freaking out on the thing. He's like, is that a gun? And he's like, yeah, Uwadu, everybody sees it. It's a gun. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to get out of here. You guys don't even have to worry about me. And as he gets off the train, he's like, now, what do you flack nerds want? And it's like 50 riot cops all in their gear. And they're like, yeah, you better get on the ground. You're under arrest. All of a sudden, the Human Torch shows up, flies in, pulls him out of there, brings him to his house. And they start talking. And I don't know if this is the first time anybody has seen Johnny Storm in however long, but this is the first time I've seen Johnny in an awful long time even mentioned in a comic.
Yeah, but remember, he was a big part of the cosmic stuff mm-hmm. because he was didn't he die in the Negative Zone
And he came back. But came back. So he's like, hey, I'm the Human Torch. And he's like, I don't even know who you are. And he goes, well, you know Ben Grimm. He's part of your team. And he's like, well, you used to be part of the team. We're kind of dissolved now. And he's like, oh, you're the dude that he hates. You're the dude that's a jerk. And he goes, yeah, so you do know Ben then. And he's like, look, I'm trying to find my way off this planet. And he goes, I don't think stealing cheeseburgers and sodas and fries is the way to do it. And he's like, well, you know, the guy did this and, you know, I was trying to do this. And he's saying something about, you know, so I need to be somewhere. And he says, hey, I know a team in the Great Lakes that are looking to Great Lakes Avengers. Have you read that, by the way?
I have not. Is it awesome?
I haven't read it. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, he says, so, you know, maybe you do that. And he's like, yeah, I just want off this planet. I don't care how I get out of here. So Lockjaw's there. Lockjaw shows up, licks him in the face. They decide, and then Rocket Raccoon takes off and he ends up in a place where he meets a guy who is telling him that he can get him off world. And after a couple things, you find out that the guy's a Skrull. And as he says, you know what? I'm going to help you, dude. I'll help you get off this world. And the guy goes kind of behind the shadows. And as he walks behind the shadows, he gets his head cut off. And you see this dude just standing there with a Skrull head and looking at Rocket Raccoon going, aren't you a prize? And that's how it ends.
Huh.
So I'm in. I am in.
That sounds like a really fun book.
This was a ton of fun.
I mean, the guy that got his head cut off.
No. And I love the fact that it was – this is the book that I wished Howard the Duck was. I think Howard the Duck – when it was out, spent way too much time trying to be a little more clever and a little more than it should have been. It's a story about a duck trapped on Earth. This is a raccoon trapped on Earth, and I am really excited about it.
So I am going to go over to the DC Universe for my final book of the day and talk about Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, number 5. Now, in this first arc here, Batgirl is kind of thrown together with Black Canary and with the Huntress because there is a mob boss who is buying information that Oracle used to have, mm-hmm. and there is a new person who is using the moniker Oracle. And so they're kind of on two fronts trying to, A, stop this organized crime person, who I think her name is Phenice, and they're also trying to find out who Oracle is. And so as we open up issue number 5, we are in Gotham Tower at the penthouse suite, and the Birds of Prey have fought their way up here because this is where Oracle is. So they open up the door, and they come into this lair, and it's filled with Batgirl stuff. So they walk in, and there is a glass case with a Batgirl costume in it. You have all of these monitors that have pictures of Batgirl, and you have the Huntress who picks up this Chinese food, and she says it's Kung Pao chicken. It's still warm, which means this person's still around here somewhere. And they're looking through, and you have Barbara who jumps on the computer, and she's like, I'll search Oracle's history. That, you know, they couldn't have gone far. And all of a sudden, as they're talking, this guy walks in from the bathroom. And he's like, hey, what's up? He says, come on out. Barbara Gordon, my house, this is amazing. He says, did you see my collection? And they're like, what the heck are you talking about? He's like, no, I'm still working on tracking down your first grappling gun. You know, I know it took time, a few times for you to finesse the retractability, so there should be one stuck on a rooftop somewhere. Wow. And he's talking about all this stuff, and he's like, BOP in the flesh. And so he's really excited, and the girls are about to beat the crap out of him. And he's like, what are you talking about? And so Batgirl's like, well, why did you steal my name? And he's like, it's a good name. It's a shame to see it go to waste. Well, what was your little robot rogues gallery downstairs? I reprogrammed them with all the signature moves of the Joker and the Penguin and stuff. I thought you guys would like that. And so they're talking to this guy, and as the conversation is going on, he's kind of been leading them on this chase after this mob person. And there's a couple times where they sort of narrowly escaped and bad stuff was happening and all this kind of stuff. And what he's trying to tell them is, A, I've been trying to help you. And B, I'm auditioning for you. I want to be the Oracle on your team now. And he goes on to explain that he knows that he put two and two together and he figured out that Barbara is Oracle because he was a huge fan of Oracle. And he has a flashback to sort of back in the day where you see him as, you know, a younger teenager, and he was on the deep web and he's, you know, doing all these hacking things, and he's in these different message boards and these forums and stuff like that. And Oracle was very well known. And there were times where Oracle used to enlist the help of other hackers to get certain information. And, you know, he was a person who always wanted to get the call from Oracle. And sure enough, one time there was a time where she needed information and he got the information for her. And so he was super excited about that. But at some point, Oracle just dropped off the face of the earth. And when that happened, he started thinking, well, anybody could be Oracle. And if anybody could be Oracle, maybe I could be Oracle. And so he decided to track down her old equipment, all the information. He searched and found her repository of information and then basically started selling it, started selling this information that she had gathered. And that's where the organized crime people come in. And so you have Barbara, who's basically saying to him, I don't care if you wanted to be a member of our team or not. You've been profiting off of this information, and that means we don't trust you. And he's saying to them, let me help you find this mob person. I can help you guys on this mission. I'll show you that I'm to be trusted and all this kind of stuff. So Barbara decides to stay with him, and the two of them are going to remotely work from the computer while you have Huntress and Black Canary who go out and try to locate this mob person because they think they have a beat on where they are. And so as they're sitting down talking, Barbara is simultaneously talking to him and also hacking his database to see like what he's been up to. And she finds out that all the money that he got, he gave to charity. And so she's now starting to think maybe this guy isn't so bad. So as that's going on, you have Huntress and Black Canary who get to this location in a warehouse where they've been sent by these two. And they finally find this Phoenice woman. And Huntress at first is going to take her out. And then she turns around and you have Barbara saying, Huntress, you got to take the shot now. And she says, oh my God, I can't. Why not? Because Phoenice is my mother.
Oh.
And that's the way the, and we knew her dad was a bad guy.
Yeah.
But now we see that her mother is a bad guy. And that's the way this particular issue ends. So what you have here, and I did not give the creative team, I don't believe, but I will give it to you now. Julie Benson and Shauna Benson are the writers. Roge Antonio is the artist. Alan Pasalacqua does the colors. Darren Bennett does the letters. And you have the Chris Conroy is the editor of this book. And so what you have here is this potential new recruit that's going to be joining the Birds of Prey, who I don't know how that's going to turn out yet, but I have a feeling he's going to become a new character on the team. And of course, you have the Huntress who is now taking center stage because it was all about Batgirl to this point and finding out who was using her name. And now we see it's sort of the spotlight's moving over to Huntress as we find out her mom is this person they've been looking for. So pretty cool stuff. I've enjoyed this series so far. I think this is the latest issue, number 5, but it's been fun. It's been action-packed. It's been kind of a mystery because you're trying to find out who Oracle is. So now that they know, where's it going to go?
It's a monthly, right?
This is a monthly book. This is a $2.99 book, and it has been a lot of fun.
That's one of those books that I am looking at going, all right, because I'm doing a thing with the weekly books, yep, the biweeklies. I'd like to throw a couple more monthlies in and stay away from some of the constantly weekly.
I'm super behind on my weekly books, man. Those are tough to keep up with.
Yep, and that's why.
But for Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, I'm not reading Batgirl. Mm-hmm. Because Batgirl, as I've never been a huge Batgirl fan unless it was Stephanie Brown. And so, but with Black Canary and with Huntress there as well, that to me is a cool team. So I'm excited. And I like team books.
Yeah. And you're getting a lot of Stephanie Brown in Detective Comics.
Which, you know what? I missed a couple issues of and fell off of. And I can't believe it. So I need to go back and I need to fill in all the back issues of that.
Stephanie's really got a huge role in the last couple issues.
And I've heard nothing but great things about that run. So good. I really need to get back on Detective.
So I forgot that I have a code.
And the sticker worked?
Came right, because it's cold out, so it doesn't stick.
Okay, so we will end this show with a Cracker Jack treat.
Yes, so go to marvel.com/redeem27HJ3599Q2T.
Very well done. And your reading skills are on point in 2017 so far.
So what I've realized, I put a little more light in here.
You did.
I'm still working around a lot of it.
Hopefully there's a little less echo in here. What you can't see is that in the basement area that we recorded, Matt put a bunch of sound-absorbing bed sheets up around. So it's got this sort of nice vibe in here now. But yeah, I feel like it sounds better.
And I'm still going. And it was funny because I'm now finding the spots because of my eyes. My eyes are not the greatest anymore. And I'm finding spots now where I don't have to squint. But if I tip my head up and look down to the left, I've got perfect vision.
There you go.
So that's what I do now.
It's just a matter of your perspective.
I look like I'm having a stroke, but I'm able to see.
Enjoy that comic book. That is going to wrap up this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.